Can you believe it's conference championship week? Soon we're going to find out which two teams will be heading to Miami to face off in Super Bowl 54. Will it be Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers or the San Francisco 49ers with their championship caliber defense? Time's up for two of the teams playing this weekend, but you still have time to feed your fantasy fix with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch means more with the DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching a game like having a free shot at over $750,000 with your first deposit. Plus, for a limited time, all new and existing users can get a deposit bonus of up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with throughout the playoffs. Download the DraftKings app now and use code LOCKEDON. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus of up to $500 on your next deposit. New users, be sure to enter code LOCKEDON during signup, and you'll also get a free shot at over $750,000 with your first deposit. That's code LOCKEDON, and you can get a deposit bonus of up to $500 only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25-time playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to today's episode of Locked On Bucs Podcast. I am your host, David Harrison, joined as always by Evan Winter, and we're going to talk about the national championship game from a prospect evaluation sort of angle, from an NFL draft sort of angle. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at @DH82_Bucks. Follow Evan at @Evan_Winter. As most of you probably know, but if you're new, thanks for joining us. But both Evan and I are writers covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for BucsNation.com, part of SB Nation. You can follow that at @Bucks_Nation. And then, of course, follow the show at @LockedOnBucks over there on Twitter. Evan, so final college football game of the 2019 season. It was a pretty good one. It was a pretty solid way to go out, even though my Ohio State Buckeyes and your Tennessee Volunteers were not part of the festivities. It was still a pretty good way to end the year, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you had the four best teams playing. You had the two best quarterbacks playing, dueling it out, duking it out for a national championship. And you had high-scoring affairs throughout most of the games. I mean, the Ohio State-Clemson game was 29-26. This game was 42-25. And then, obviously, the LSU-Oklahoma game, even though it was a blowout, it was also a high-scoring affair. Man, this LSU Tigers team, one of the more entertaining teams I've watched in college football in quite a long time. I think of a lot of the USC teams back in the early 2000s with Matt Leinart and Steve Smith and Reggie Bush and all of them. I mean, just unreal. Mike Williams, even if you want to go that far. Just a really fun team to watch. And, of course, you got to love Ed Orgeron. So I even heard he spoke in full French after the game. He did an interview in French, which is absolutely amazing. The dude is a national treasure. Yeah, very, very good end to the very, very solid end to the college football season. And I can't wait to see what next year has in store.
It was definitely a great match, one for the ages. You know, like you said, kind of takes you back to those USC. I mean, that USC-Texas matchup between Leinart, Bush, and Vince Young, that was a classic. And I think this is a classic as well. Maybe not as much of a down-to-the-wire type of matchup. And like you said, the coaches, I mean, even Dabo, like two of them, probably the most television-worthy head coaches going at it. Like, I know Nick Saban got the meme treatment. He was on the pregame and there on the sidelines during the game, of course. And, you know, great coach, but I mean, not the greatest personality. Kind of like a Belichick type of guy where genius, you know, NFL or football mind and all that stuff, very accomplished, but he's not going to get a reality show anytime soon. Whereas both coaches in this matchup, you see getting a reality show. And I would probably honestly even watch, even though I'm not big into reality TV. But here's the question, and you know, let's not turn it into something that is not. Like, Clemson didn't get, you know, run out the building or anything, but I've seen a little bit of traffic. Of course, I'm an Ohio State fan. My other school, Arizona State, where I actually have a degree from, didn't make it to the finals either. I know we're all shocked that Arizona State wasn't in the playoffs, but is it possible that Ohio State would have done better against Joe Burrow, one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever come out, and the LSU Tigers?
I think they would have, yes. I think Ohio State, as much as I like Clemson, I think they're a more complete team. I think their defense is better, and I think they have a better offense. I mean, you really like what Justin Fields did, what he had 50 touchdowns to two interceptions or 40 or something crazy like that over the season. You got to love what J.K. Dobbins can do back there. And then they have a tough secondary that could have matched up really, really well with Clemson's receivers, who are obviously – what makes that offense go. I mean, you can talk about Travis Etienne all day, but T. Higgins and company are just out of this world, especially T. Higgins. Oak Ridge, Tennessee represent. But yeah, man, I really think Ohio State would have fared a lot better. I mean, Clemson was only down 3 points in the third quarter at one point, 28-25, and then LSU just kind of put the clamps on after that. But definitely feel like Ohio State would have put up a better fight for four quarters than Clemson.
Yeah, and I'm just going to leave it at that because you said it. Can't catch any crap, so I'm just going to leave it alone. But it was a great matchup. And at the end of the day, man, it doesn't matter what logo you wear, what colors you wear, what school you come from. You got to earn the right to be there, and Clemson earned the right to be there. So zero shade whatsoever is just something that I've seen popping up. And, of course, something that creeps into my mind as a fan of a major football program. But looking forward to seeing Arizona State in the college, because I'm sure that Herm Edwards is going to get the Sun Devils there in 2020, 2021, especially given, did you do that Twitter thing where it's like snapshot of the teams is next year's playoff? Did you do that?
Oh, yeah, dude. I got Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, and Miami. I was just like, nice. Wow. So let's just keep the last 3 years on repeat.
Got Arizona State, and I legitimately got Arizona State. It was the first screenshot I took was Arizona State, and I just smiled because I'm like, okay, it's not going to happen, but it's just amazing that I got Arizona State on the first one. And then I think Alabama, I can't remember who the other two were, but Alabama was in there.
Could you imagine Herm Edwards in the national or the college football playoff? That would just be awesome.
I want him to say you play to win the game at least once every matchup that he can.
How perfect would it be if he's sitting there holding, I don't know what the name of the trophy is, but if he's holding the crystal ball trophy at the end, you know, above as they win the national championship, and he just, you play to win the game.
He might as well say it, because it's going to get played over and over again anyway. So if he doesn't say it on his own, everybody's going to say it for him by repeating his right. phrases.
Right.
So the national championship is over, which means college football is over. Of course, we've got some all-star games coming up, which we'll talk about as they get ready. We got the East-West, talk about that one, then the Senior Bowl, and then the Combine. But before that, we're going to break down this game from a prospect standpoint. So what Evan and I have done, guys, specs. Evan actually called dibs on two of them. A little mad about one, not so much mad about the other, because I think all of you have heard me talk enough about the one prospect. I actually got hit up by a couple of media people who know me about Grant Delpit. I don't know why I'm avoiding saying his name, but so I'm interested to hear what Evan has to say, and then of course I'll give my own little take on that whole thing. But Evan, I'm going to kick it off, and it's low hanging fruit, man. But we're going to do it anyway. We're going to talk about Joe Burrow, the upcoming in the 2020 NFL draft, because if it does, the Cincinnati Bengals don't deserve to be a franchise anymore. Like if this organization does not draft Joe Burrow number one overall, they just need to sell the team and let him move somewhere, because I don't know a lot of people from Cincinnati. James is the closest person to anybody I know in Cincinnati, but I'm pretty sure that the city of Cincinnati deserves an NFL franchise that isn't going to mess up such a draft pick. And that doesn't mean that Joe Burrow is going to be an NFL legend by any means. Number one overall picks flame out just as much, or if not, maybe even more, the number one overall picks pan out. But in this football landscape, like, unless something happens between now and April, you know, an arrest or something coming out, you know, a failed drug test that he had to submit to after the national championship, unless something dramatic happens with Joe Burrow, he's clear cut the number one prospect in this year's class, I think. And this game really just kind of solidified it. And perhaps the best thing that could have happened to Joe Burrow from a draft stock potential is to actually fall behind. Because really, you look at last year and kind of the development that he had towards the end of the season, you know, kind of hitting the radar as a guy who could be something moving forward. And then you look at this year, and there really hasn't been a time that I can think of where this year Joe Burrow really was in a position to possibly be shook. But in this game, early on, weaker mentality quarterback would be shook. And like, I honestly look at, so we talk about Ohio State. If Ohio State falls behind the way that on, even though it was pretty decent performance there early on by Clemson. I don't know that Ohio State has the mentality. The problem we saw when Clemson and Ohio State played each other is once Clemson came back themselves and Ohio State got punched in the mouth themselves, they really couldn't get off the ropes. So to see Joe Burrow, not only, I mean, he never looked like he was, they were on the ropes anyway, but a lot of other teams, a lot of other quarterbacks would have looked like they were on the ropes. And I think that's a testament to Joe Burrow as a leader, as a quarterback. I think it's a testament to how his team rallies around him and his personality. So if you're a franchise like the Cincinnati Bengals, who pretty much have built their stadium on the ropes, you need a quarterback like Joe Burrow, who's not going to come in and panic, who's not going to come in and let the big moments and the bright lights get to him, even when your team is falling behind, even when you're, you know, punting, what, 3-4 possessions in a row and not really getting a lot of things going early on. He's going to stay the course and he's going to make things happen. And then once that door opens up, he's going to kick it. He's going to kick it open the rest of the way and just take off from there.
That was honestly the most encouraging thing for me that I saw out of him, was the ability to bounce back after a slow start. I mean, how many times, I mean, just going back to the Oklahoma game that I was talking about earlier, he comes out and, you know, leads his team down the field, what, 4 out of the first 5 drives or whatever it was, and is just on fire. This championship game was absolutely different. You know, like you said, come out, punt 2 or 3 times in a row, not looking very effective. The entire offense wasn't playing really well, and then things just settled down. He settled down, and he started making plays. And, man, the guy is just absolutely unreal, what he can do in terms of his athleticism, his arm, his accuracy, how he reads the field. I mean, he was dissecting some of those zone coverages and just – throwing the ball to a spot where he knew the receiver was going to be, and the receiver was going to be there and make the play, and the receiver would make the play. And by allowing others to do that, or by making those throws and making those decisions, that is being, to me, what we've kind of talked about in the Bucs Nation chat. That, to me, is what a franchise quarterback does. He elevates those around them. He makes those around them better. We can argue all day on the merits of the talent when it comes to the receivers and the offensive line, and then the offensive coordinator and Joe Brady. We can talk about that all day. But the fact of the matter is Joe Burrow is out there executing it and getting it done, which has to bode well. And, yes, if the Cincinnati Bengals do not take this guy – unless they trade out of the first round, or out of the first overall pick for just, I'm talking a fool's ransom of capital, then yes, they need to be shut down the next day. Actually, by the time whoever picks Joe Burrow instead of the Bengals, once that pick's over with, go ahead and shut the Bengals franchise down. Send AJ Green to Tampa Bay, and let's just go ahead and move on from that place up there. I can't even call it Cincinnati right now with that idea in my head, or with that thought in my head.
Yeah, it would be one of the more confusing – I'm just going to call it confusing out of respect. It would be one of the more confusing moves, I think, in NFL draft history, to be honest. And you know what? I mean, I'm sure, you know, there are other people maybe – I can't recall ever seeing a Joe Tractor, someone who takes away from him. But if you were going to try to take anything away from Burrow as an NFL prospect, it would be that he's only got the 1 year of really great play, which isn't necessarily his fault. You know, everybody kind of knows the story about what happened at Ohio State and Dwayne Haskins over Joe Burrow and all that stuff. But again, like I said, if there was anything that could have helped his draft stock any more than it already has helped, it's the fact that they did start slow, fell behind to a very good Clemson team, defending national champions, and then were able to come roaring back. Sorry for the pun, but... And they were able to. So it was good to see. Because, again, a Buckeye anymore or what have you, you know, Joe Burrow, anybody connected to the team is definitely someone I want to see be successful. So seeing him successful, for me, there was really no losing, because I like so many personalities on both sides of the ball and so many of the talents on both sides of the ball that it was a win no matter what. It was just a treat to see it. LSU Ohio State would have been better, arguably, from the performance standpoint, but just point which – you know what, at the end of the day, once the ball is kicked off, I don't care about the storylines. I want to see who the better team is. So a deserving game, to say the least. You know, the only part missing of this whole thing, and I could have swore, and I'm pretty sure I said on a previous episode, so if I did, guys, I need to make a correction, accepted an invitation to the Senior Bowl. But come to find out, he actually hasn't. I'm sure he's been invited. I can't imagine that Jim and those guys wouldn't invite him just on the off chance he takes it. But the Cincinnati Bengals are coaching at the Senior Bowl. I mean, it might almost be unfair, to be honest with you. Like, there might actually be an – like, Jack, you see, like, step in and do something. If Joe Burrow were to accept an invitation to the Senior Bowl, like, he doesn't have to play in the game.
No.
Literally getting an opportunity to start in franchise quarterback in January, that's an advantage that not many teams and quarterbacks can get. Like I said, I'm sure that you'd probably have like a Jerry Jones out there, you know, throwing a Texas size fit about that or something. But I mean, let the coach staff come in. The player's allowed to, you know, he qualifies because he's a senior. So if he were to go to Mobile and participate in Senior Bowl practices and get a chance to sit down there and literally start working with Zach Taylor and that staff in January, it could mean a lot of things for that Bengals franchise, as much as James probably would hate to see it. But this is not locked on Joe Burrow. This is locked on Bucks, and we're talking about the national championship from a prospect standpoint. Obviously, Joe Burrow, not a Buccaneer, not really on the Buccaneers' radar. I know James wants them to sell everything to trade up to get him. I traded up to draft Joe Burrow. It would be very expensive, so you essentially are talking multiple championships, or it's a bust, you know what I mean, in that situation, because you're literally selling the future of your franchise. But I wouldn't hate on the move whatsoever. But the likelihood of him coming. So let's move on to a guy who maybe could land in Tampa, Evan.
So I've got to take Isaiah Simmons, the linebacker out of Clemson. And he's listed as a linebacker. Don't let that fool you. He is 6'4", about 230 pounds. Makes me think of Cam Chancellor whenever I hear measurables like that, or I guess they're not measurables, the height, weight situation like that.
That's a nice
one. Yeah. And I mean, dude, he just, it was perfect. Everything was on display as to what he could do in that game Monday night. He can play the middle of the field. He can rush the passer. He could, like I said, line up at linebacker sometimes. 7 total tackles, 6 solo tackles, 1 sack, 2 tackles for loss, 2 pass deflections. I mean, the guy was just all over the field, and he really feels like he would be that perfect chess piece for Todd Bowles in this defense. Ren Dax of the PewterCast, actually, he was the one who got my attention on this guy when he tweeted out. He did a mock draft on the Draft Network not too long ago, and he said he took Isaiah Simmons, and that honestly is what kind of turned me on to looking at this guy. And I mean, dude, he's a hard hitter. He's a hard worker. I mean, you look at Kyle Krabs on the Draft Network. This is what stands out to me on Krabs' evaluation. Nose for the football is excellent. Trusts his offensive line, keys to attack and flow forward as needed, and illustrates natural feet for direct pathways to the football and traffic. Dude, if that doesn't sound like a Todd Bowles player to me, I mean, that's everything. So he's instinctive. He's smart. He can diagnose. I mean, those who wanted Derwin James, this might be your best chance to get him again. I mean, let's go. Let's run it back. I mean, I'll take Vea and Simmons in that kind of role. So got to love what this dude can do. And I'll be honest, man, when I first saw that tweet from Ren, I was a little put off just because I saw the linebacker and I saw the height and weight and I saw, you know, all that stuff. But people, that's why we're not lazy. That's why we dive in and do research. And this, I would not be upset at all if Tampa Bay took him at 14.
Oh, I love Isaiah. I love Isaiah Simmons. And I'll tell you, I've probably done about a handful of mock drafts on the Draft Network's mock simulator there. And I have never had Isaiah Simmons fall to number 14. And I will tell you that even though this game, we'll get into this more, I've been a big fan of Grant Delpit. If it's Isaiah Simmons or Grant Delpit, I'm taking Simmons. And yes, that Simmons may be a little bit less of a need than what Delpit would necessarily fill, you know, as most likely a free safety at the NFL level. And Simmons kind of comes in as a hybrid. But, man, you mentioned, Isaiah Simmons on a football field. And I got it. He's not going to do all of those things at the NFL level. But the fact that he could, the fact that he has experience in all of those things and he's successful in them. Like, it's not like Clemson is putting him in the slot against, you know, some of your quicker and faster receivers because they don't have an option. No, they're putting him in there because he knows how to leverage space. He knows how to read breaks. Right. He knows how to shadow. He knows how to trail. He knows how to do all that stuff. There was a tweet sent out during the game. I can't remember who it was that sent it. And a shout out for it. But there was a tweet sent out. I think it was about halfway through the game that had broken down he had taken on the field and everywhere from linebacker to strong safety to slot corner. He lined up on the perimeter and game where a lot of defenders really got exposed, Isaiah Simmons rose above the rest and really, I think, solidified himself as a top 15 pick, which is good news for Buccaneers fans if they like him. Because if Simmons goes through workouts and everything else and just reiterates and just reinforces what people already believe about him, I don't think there's any chance he gets. I could even see him potentially moving into the top 10. I don't know exactly where the Panthers draft, but they're missing a pretty big 20 season due to retirement. If you haven't heard, Luke Kuechly decided to retire. Isaiah Simmons is not a middle linebacker per se, but he's a guy you could come in and fill a whole lot of roles and team up with a Brian Burns or team up with, if they bring Gerald McCoy back. I don't know. They've got a lot of defensive holes, but Isaiah Simmons is a guy who literally, based off of the circumstances, the offensive formation, and plug and play him in so many different roles. And he's obviously got the mental capacity to do it, because just knowing, okay, in this look as a strong safety, here's my linebacker, here's my read as a slot. Like, he understand, like, the football IQ on this guy is just off the charts. One of my favorite parts of watching Clemson play Ohio State was Isaiah Simmons, as much as it pained me, to watch him do what he was doing. But yeah, man, just a great dude. And he was the one I was mad you took. When you called dibs on Simmons, like, man, and obviously I have a lot to say about him. The Buccaneers fans who just, go to a draft site, like you said, and say, see, LB, go, we don't need linebackers. Outside of that, this might be the prospect that literally every fan in Tampa could get behind as a number one, pick for the Buccaneers in this draft class. But I don't know if we can always, if we'll ever get to a 100% consensus. But if there is one, I think Isaiah Simmons would be it.
Think Cam Chancellor's body and Deion Buchanan's role. That's what I see.
Yeah, and man, he's such, like you said, he is such a Todd Bowles. There are not a lot of those out there. I think that, like, the interview, he's got to be on the Buccaneers board come April for the first round there. I just can't see it not happening. So great stuff from Isaiah there. My next guy, I'm going to go with someone who hurt themselves a little bit, and that's Christian Fulton. And listen, some of you are going to think I'm overreacting a little bit here, but honestly, first defensive snap of the game. Great diagnosis, right? So the Clemson kind of went with a little bit of a trick play, right? Try to get the ball out on the perimeter and try to get LSU to kind of overcommit to some things. And Christian diagnosed it great, got around his block great, went in to try to make the tackle, missed the tackle, immediately got up and started celebrating while his tackle that he missed. Listen, I understand his teammates made the tackle, and it was a great play overall by the defensive unit. But as a defender, as a professional defender, someone who's about to be a professional, that's an opportunity for two things. One, it's an opportunity for a guy like Travis Etienne, or imagine if that's Ezekiel Elliott, or if that's Kareem Hunt, or if it's Nick Chubb. That's a running back. There are running backs in the NFL that when a cornerback misses that kind of a tackle, that dude can turn that into a 40-yard run, a 70-yard run down the sideline. As a defender, when you miss a tackle, celebrating like you did something great, and open up the possibility that your teammates aren't going to corral him the way you think they are. While you're celebrating, it reminds me of the Nick Young gif where he's, turned his fingers up in the air and a stupid grin on his face while the ball is clanging off the rim. Like, dude, celebrate after the play. If you're going to celebrate at all, celebrate after the play. But don't celebrate missing a tackle. Like, you missed the tackle, bro.
Like, yeah, no, that just shows a lack of awareness.
Yeah, it shows a lack of awareness, and it shows a lack of professionalism, which, okay, he's an amateur. He's allowed that. I'll give him that. It shows immaturity. But at the other end, right, and we've seen the Buccaneers defense do this pretty well in 2019, and hopefully we'll see more of it in 2020, the play to try to punch the ball out or punch the ball out. If the ball carrier is being held up by his LSU teammates instead of being taken to the ground immediately, you're now in a position, as Fulton was, to come from behind the play and potentially and get a crucial turnover game to give your team immediate momentum and put your opponent on their heels. You're flaunting yourself to the audience. Like, it was a very bad look. And again, if you guys out there think I'm overreacting to that, I will take that. Potentially I am. But I'm not saying at the same time, I'm not saying, well, that takes Christian Fulton from a day one to a day three pick for me. That's I'm not saying that either. But it does matter. It shows maturity. And this Buccaneers staff, you know, Todd Bowles specifically, Bruce Arians, they've talked about those guys who are out there for themselves. We want the guys who are out here to be part of a unit, part of a team, so on and so forth. And that just kind of shows me different. And then you get into the rest of the game. He looked bad in trail. He looked bad against the ball. He looked bad in anticipation. He looked bad. And it's kind of weird to say because actually finishing second on the team. So as a cornerback, finishing second on the team with tackles, that's actually something you'd put a feather in your cap about. But so many aspects of the rest of it were overshadowed that, you know, in a negative light, that it's kind of hard to really celebrate any of the things that he did out there. I'm sure he feels great today. You know, he's a national champion and he deserves it. I'm not saying he's not a day one guy. What I'm saying though is it opens up questions that maybe before weren't really there. And you're going to have to go back. If you're really serious about a guy like Christian Fulton potentially being a draft pick for your team, you're going to have to go back through some other games and see if there are other circumstances where maybe you missed it because the talent level blinded you. Not a question. A very talented young man, but you know, what's the cliche, like hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard or something like that. That's a kind of like, this is the national championship game. And it's something I talked about Grant Delpit before this season, the national championship game, because that was going to, am I in love with this dude as a potential Buccaneer, or am I going to sit here and say, okay, maybe I was wrong about some things. Christian Fulton, I mean, I don't think the Bucs are targeting a corner in the first round anyway, but an early day two prospect definitely hurt his draft stock, I think. And if there's tape before this game that reinforces some of the things we saw against Clemson, it's going to get found now. It's going to get exposed now even more than it would have anyway. And it's going to impact his draft stock. Christian Fulton, I believe, is a junior, right? Yeah, he's a junior. So, I mean, I guess theoretically he could actually come back to school. I don't believe that's a thing that's going to happen. But if he does decide to come out, which is what everybody expects, definitely not a good way for him to end his career, despite the championship. Yeah,
that situation you're talking about where that lack of awareness is, you know, that glaring and that obvious, excuse me, that's certainly a red flag. That can trickle down. That could lead to later lapses in focus, concentration, awareness, whatever word you want to use, that can lead to further lapses later down the road. I mean, how much of a lack of detail is he going to have towards a certain assignment 1 week? I mean, it's fair to open up that type of jar of questions, for lack of a better phrase, whenever you see something like that. I mean, I'm pretty sure we all know what a brain fart looks like. Look who the quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is. And I say that in all due respect. And I say that, you know, as nicely as possible, but we know a brain fart when we see one. And that was sure enough one on Fulton's side. So like you're saying, it's nothing that's going to drop him from the 10th overall pick to 150, but it's certainly right. Something to monitor, and it's something you want to watch. And like you said, teams are going to need to go back and look at previous tape of previous opponents and see if there are these types of mistakes and those types of lack of awareness and all that other good stuff. But just sticking with the LSU secondary and disappointing players. And this guy really disappointed me because I was very high on him until I found out about Isaiah Simmons. But Grant Delpit, man, seeing a lot of rumblings here lately. And this is one thing I've been trying to figure out. And granted, I haven't watched much tape. I've watched a lot of LSU games and I've watched him quite a bit, but a lot of people are saying he's an in-the-box safety. He would work better for that, which definitely I kind of just – yeah, I've seen this guy make amazing interceptions. He had, what, I think 6 interceptions his junior year. Can't think of right off the top of the head what he has this year. But a 2-time All-American. And when you look at what he does or his biggest issue or what he can't do, his biggest issue is tackling. You're going to tell me this guy has an in-the-box safety and he can't tackle? That makes no sense. Now, granted, he did have a sack. He did have the forced fumble at the end of the game. But there was also 3 or 4 instances where he just outright missed a tackle that he should have had. And if I'm going to draft a guy as a box safety, which I don't think Tampa Bay would draft him as a box safety to begin with. They don't need to if that is indeed what he will become. but I don't want a guy that can't tackle if I'm putting him in the box. You know what I mean? I mean, that just screams counterintuitive and putting the cart ahead of the horse or in front of the horse and all that stuff. So, you know, he just, to me, just raised more questions to what he really is and how effective he can really be. But overall, man, outside of the forced fumble at the end of the game, he had a pretty quiet game, and I was pretty disappointed in that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, he did come away with a sack, which was, you know, a pretty good play design by the LSU defense. And I think, honestly, though, like that sack, I think was more on Clemson's offense, not adjusted. Because, I mean, because they saw it. You know what I mean? You can see it on the telecast. Kirk Herbstreit talked about they saw it. Kirk Herbstreit saw it. And I know he's a experienced quarterback as well. But, you know, I think that's more a lack of execution from the Clemson side than it was on LSU side. But, yeah, man, Grant Delpit is someone, and like I said, there's other people who, you know, are in the media landscape. I got a message from a buddy of mine, and he specifically said, he's like, hey, you know, I know you were really high on Grant Delpit, and, you know, what do you think now after the national championship game? Shook me, you know what I mean, a little bit, to be quite honest with you, as much as I can. And I know that Ren, I guarantee you, Ren was there a while, and he was probably wanted to message me or tweet at me or something. And yeah, and I wouldn't have hated on him if he did. Yeah, a really bad night to write. And again, I know he wasn't the only one, but at the end of the day, you know, when you're talking about, you know, college prospects turning into NFL pros, you're gonna be evaluated on what you put on film, and what he put on film was not good in this game. Yeah, if anybody out there has a misgiving that Grant Delpit is going to be an in-the-box safety, you can get rid of that now. He's not. He's definitely going to be a coverage guy. He's definitely going to be the guy that you look to keep the lid on the offense and make plays and have the range that he's displayed. But the last time we talked about Grant Delpit, Evan, I talked about, you know, the reason I wanted to see him in this game is because of the caliber of offense he was going to match up against. Because when you look at the role he would potentially fill in a Buccaneers defense, there are going to be situations where he's expected to make a play to on the perimeter to stop a run, or to make a play in the open field and stop and come up and help in run support. Because as it is, if a running back gets to the second or you know, heaven or God forbid it, the third level defense, there's not going to be many players there. So as a safety, especially as a deep cover guy, potentially, you're going to be looked on to make those plays. You're going to be looked upon to come up for your team. And if this is a representation of what he's going to be able to do, it's not good, and it's not worth a first-round draft pick as far as I'm concerned. So this one game, he looked like a day two guy. And, I mean, honestly, yeah. If this is the only game I saw, if I was only grading this game and breaking down this game, I'd give him a third-round grade.
Yeah, he looked like a role player. He looked like a role player more than anything. Not a two-time All-American. Yeah.
He didn't look like a Thorpe Award winner, you know. But again, it's greater than just this one game. So you have to go back. But again, just like with Fulton, and I want to correct myself. So Christian Fulton was a CJ Terrell is a junior, the Clemson cornerback who got worked, who I actually considered putting about. If I were Christian Fulton, just to go back to that real quick, I would be calling Jim Nagy over at the recent Senior Bowl and asking for an invite, because again, you can't go like that. You're going to hang your hat on it for your NFL resume. You're going out for college. He needs to go to Senior Bowl. So if anybody out there knows Christian Fulton, tell him I said that.
I'll let him know.
But anyway, yeah. But back to Grant Delpit. Listen, I was already Xavier McKinney is a very strong prospect. Grant Delpit is a very strong prospect, and he still is. And this might actually put Xavier McKinney ahead of Grant Delpit for me. Honestly, this might take Grant Delpit off my board completely personally, because he is a first round guy. Yep. So I'm not, you know, like if we're talking about Buccaneers at 14, I might completely take him off the list of guys that I would like them to consider after this performance. And again, we're going to go back and we're going to look at some other things. Cause listen, cause Rent, again, to his credit, to Ren's credit, when we talked about Grant before, he immediately was like, no, dude, like, what are you talking? Like, no, he's such a liability in the run game. And I didn't believe that he was that big of a liability. But again, I was like, national championship. If he makes some business decisions, you know, against, I don't know, some of the cupcake teams that the LSU plays during the year. Okay. I got you maybe a little bit. Okay. This is a national championship game. if you're playing this game, you're not doing it with a business decision mindset. You're doing it to go out for your team and win a national championship. And so if this is Grant Delpit turned up to 100, I'm good at 14. I'm looking somewhere. Now, if they were to like trade back to say 25, 26, take Grant Delpit and stockpile some draft picks, okay. Okay,
yeah, we're
good feeling of the potential.
No, yeah,
can't see that guy taking Edwards or Andrew Adams. I just can't.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, the only reason he might even get a head start on him because he would be somewhat familiar with the defense. I mean, that's really all I could see, especially after what those two guys did last year. And then you got to think Isaiah Whitehead is kind of their why do I keep calling him Isaiah Whitehead? Jordan Whitehead is kind of their strong safety already. Yeah, and I like what he did last year. So I don't know why I keep calling him. Who is Isaiah Whitehead? But anyways, I don't want to see him get any playing time taken away from him. So no, I'm right there with you, man.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to stay on the LSU side of the ball and I'm going to talk about wide receiver Justin Jefferson. And again, I kind of actually just realized that all three I'm probably not going to draft anyway, but hey, you know what? These are guys that stood out to me. So I want to talk about them anyway. Justin Jefferson. So not the best receiver in the game to Ja'Marr Chase, but Ja'Marr Chase isn't going to be in the NFL draft this year, so we'll talk about him next year. 9 catches, 106 yards. He didn't get in the end zone, but man, if he didn't show that he can be a reliable wide receiver for his quarterback, reliable for his team, solid in the open field, solid against coverage. I mean, I don't want to call him, like, he's not physically the same as Mike Evans, you know what I mean? But he's got some Mike Evans qualities to him, I think.
Soft hands, big. He can run a little bit better after the catch. But yeah,
that's the biggest difference. Yeah. I think, is he gets after the yards after catch a little bit more than
right. But definitely a fluid route runner. Dude, he really impressed me the other night, and a lot of the debate among the season, especially in the SEC, was who had the best receiving core in the league. You know, was it Alabama with Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, and the other two guys that I can't think of right off the top of my head? Was it Florida with Van Jefferson and the other cat, or was it LSU with these guys? That was a pretty hotly debated topic for a pretty good amount of the year. And I mean, dude, the LSU receivers showed out, at least those two did, Chase and Jefferson, and they looked great, man. And you know, you can say, obviously, look who they had throwing the ball, but those guys are out there snagging balls out of the air. They were going up on ladders to make catches, and they were making plays after the catch with using their dynamic ability. So really like what Jefferson can do. And obviously, depending on what happens with Breshad Perryman, there's no guarantee that he's coming back into Tampa Bay. There's no guarantee that Scotty Miller or Justin Watson is going to take the next step. So Tampa Bay should be looking at drafting a receiver in this draft. Not saying take one on day one, not saying that at all. But they should definitely look at a guy that can maybe step up and fill that role and get those grimy catches that Bruce Arians like to talk about during training camp last year.
No, most definitely. I think wide receiver is an underrated potential need for the Buccaneers. I mean, you got Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, obviously two of the best receivers in the National Football League, but both ended their season with hamstring injuries. And hamstrings are nothing to mess with. To re-injure your hamstring once you injure it is always there. Granted, I don't think either of those injuries are really serious. And I think if the Bucs were in, you know, some serious playoff contention, they probably would have tried to come back, you know, maybe push it a little bit. They erred on the side of caution. They made the smart decision given the state of their season. But yeah, like you said, if Breshad, you know, I mean, hey, Breshad Perryman didn't get the season started off right, but he finished it the right way. And the way he finished it could definitely see him cashing in some dollar signs come the offseason. I mean, the Miami Dolphins could probably, you know, you call him in to try to bring him as like a number two guy or something like that. Just Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, and then after that is Justin Watson and Scotty Miller. No disrespect to either of those guys.
That's a steep drop
priority for you.
Yeah. that's a steep drop off from those two to those two.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's a lot left to shake out before the draft comes around. I don't know if Justin Jefferson's the type of guy who could be there, you know, on day two when the Buccaneers come around for their first pick in the second round there. But, I mean, hey, second round, and Breshad pairing up for another team. I mean, he's a good quality talent. And yeah, I mean, some of the things that he brings to the table that, you know, Mike Evans may not necessarily. I mean, that the juke, they're calling it the Reggie Bush juke.
Yeah, it was nice. And the my favorite part of it, though, really is the field awareness. Like, lot of wide receivers, they catch the ball and they only see what's ahead of them. But this dude had, you know, he had the scope going, kind of like the submarine periscope going. Like, he went around that, just, again, it shows IQ. And I always love wide receivers who are willing to kind of put it out for their team and put their body on the line, kind of like guys like Randy Moss did in their career.
Oh, yeah. I know where you're going with this. So, got to say, man, my last guy that impressed me and that I would love to see Tampa Bay going after, and you alluded to it perfectly, Thaddeus Moss. Moss this, Moss that, straight bass, homie. You know, all that good stuff. Like, dude, I just simply – this is me just being selfish as hell. I want Tampa Bay to get him just so Randy Moss can hang around One Buck and Ray J all the time. Randy Moss is my favorite player of all time. Love the dude. He was so entertaining to watch. I don't give a damn if he mooned Packer fans. That's still my guy. But regardless, being serious about it, though, I think Thaddeus Moss could replace Cameron Brate. I really do. He's not very athletic, which is crazy to think that since he's Randy Moss's son. He's not really going to kill you with speed. But he's got a big catch radius. He's got good hands. I mean, you saw the catches he was making the other night. And he knows how to get open. And to me, and he might – I don't know how he is in the run game. I'd love to see how he is as a blocker. But that, to me, he might be the perfect replacement for Cam Brate, who's going to cost the Bucs $6 million this year and has a $0 dead cap hit. So that's certainly something to look into. And at least in my opinion, it's something to look into. And, man, like I said, would just love to have Randy Moss – And One Buck. So let's just leave it at that.
that could be an interesting situation. Like, if the Bucks bring in Thaddeus Moss, and you know Warren Sapp's going to visit training camp. So if they just happen to be at camp on the same day, I mean, know if One Buck can contain that much personality on their compound.
I just hope one of us or both of us are down there for that day of training camp. I just, man, just to be in the middle of that sandwich, I might just like die and go to heaven.
Yeah, that would be a pretty entertaining day. So definitely something worth seeing. Yeah, I mean, you can't argue with production, and I mean, the dude, you know, 5 catches, 36 yards, 2 touchdowns. I don't think OJ Howard had a day that good this year. sorry, not. sorry, no, I just had to. Yeah,
sorry, not sorry.
Don't take it seriously.
Speaking truth, bro. Speaking truth. Nothing. And sometimes truth hurts.
Yeah, I mean, a good game, a good way to go out. If he does, you know, he's again a guy who's a junior, so very well could be going back to Baton Rouge for his senior year. But if he comes out, it's a good way to end his career. We'll see. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know enough about him, you know, to know if he's an adequate, but. You know, again, those are guys this coaching staff talks about, you know, teaching and imparting those things in their players. Moss definitely has the build to be an effective blocker from the tight end position in the National Football League. So if it's something he's physically capable of doing, and maybe he wasn't asked to do it, coached up to do it at LSU, this coaching staff could definitely get him there if they need him to be there. So, yeah, he's a guy that definitely, if you have him around an adequate draft position, if he does come out, more than happy to see him soon for the throw out an honorable mention of this. So if you don't have one, that's fine, but I have a feeling you probably tend to research really well for these episodes. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which is someone we haven't really talked about much on this show. I don't know how much you've talked about him over at your own podcast or and stuff like that, but he's like my focus at the running back position, you know, has definitely been J.K. Dobbins for obvious reasons, one being that he's talented. Travis Etienne was obviously getting a lot of attention. There's other guys, Jonathan Taylor, you know, is going to go too high for the Buccaneers to nab, but some of those other guys. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire really hasn't been a guy that's been on many Buccaneers radars, unless you were an LSU fan. But this dude showed up and really balled out for his team. And not only did he do it on the ground, but he did it in the passing game, which I think a lot of Buccaneers fans probably should take notice of and really cling to. The fact that this guy was able to come out there, 5 catches for 54 yards, and do what he did for LSU. Again, I know I saw a lot of Doug Martin comps and a lot of muscle hamster comments, which, yeah. How do you feel about his performance? And, you know, where would you be okay with the Buccaneers drafting a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire for this team?
I liked what I saw. I feel like he got stronger as the game went on, which that obviously always works in a running back's favor. Wasn't very effective in the beginning, but I feel like also Clemson really honed in on him, which doesn't really make sense when you consider who's behind center. But regardless, he had 21 total touches. He averaged 10 yards a reception, 5 catches for 54 yards, and had 110 yards on 16 carries. So he averaged about over 8 yards a touch, if I had to guess, just going off of math in my head. Very, very effective, yeah. You know, helped kill the clock late in the game. I'd be interested to see how many yards came off that last drive, because I think 30 of his receiving yards came off that slip screen there towards the end. But either way, man, yeah, I liked what he saw. You know, Bailey brought up the Doug Martin thing in the chat, and I agree with him 100%. He says he cannot unsee it now, and I can't unsee it. Every time I watch this guy play, I'm going to think of Doug Martin. I would like to see the Bucs take him in probably the fourth or fifth round if he lasts that long. I just, you know, he had kind of a rough go of it until this year. This was kind of like his first year really breaking out. So that kind of worries me a little bit in terms of a running back. You always like to see the body of work. But then again, you can also look at the flip side and say, well, he's still got plenty of tread left on his tires. I like to say tread left on the tires, not tread off the tires, because that makes no sense to me. You got to have tread on your tires if you can still go. So that's one of those football sayings that I like just try to say the right way. But yes, but either way, over 1,400 yards this year, 6.6 yards a carry, 16 touchdowns, 55 catches. Like you said, he can catch out of the backfield, and that's just unheard of for college running backs. Well, not unheard of, but it's rare to hear of college running backs who can also pound the rock. So I would like to see them, you know, maybe do a day three type pick, you know, round four, round five type deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ballpark I had him in. I mean, if a guy like J.K. Dobbins or Travis Etienne is too rich for the Buccaneers, zone, you know, the way they rank their needs and everything, that's fine. But if a guy there is there, I mean, I know there's a lot of talk like that compensatory draft pick for Quan, it looks like it's probably going to end up being a fourth instead of a third. But I mean, if it turns into a third, or if it comes out as a third and they use that, I wouldn't hate that. But really, if they come in at the fourth round, if he's there, which, I mean, if this is a running back heavy league, like if this is a running back centric league, then I think he's probably a third round pick. But in today's NFL, everybody's still obsessed with this is a passing league, and the passing game gets you there. And I know James has been, you know, tooting the horn saying that you still need to lean on the run. And I think he's right in a lot of ways. The Tennessee Titans are definitely an example of how impactful the run can be in getting you to where you want to go. Being that they're, you know, one game away from going to the Super Bowl and probably will be going to the Super Bowl. A guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the fourth round is a huge value pick, and it does two things. I think one, it gives you a guy who's dynamic enough and versatile enough to impact both parts of what a running back can do in passing and running. But also, he's drafted further back enough to where if this team really wants to come into training camp in the preseason saying, Rojo, you're our guy, you're our lead horse, go out there and show us why you should be the guy. It gives him the opportunity to do it without a first or a second or a third round draft pick breathing down his neck immediately. But doesn't, you know, improve like he kind of did from year one to year two, from year two to year three. Then you have a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire who's versatile enough that he can start coming and eating into some of those reps if need be. So I mean, I like it there because I think day three, it's all about potential, and the dude's got potential. You can see that. Anytime you watch him play, it's just a matter of whether or not that potential is going to turn into real production. So, Evan, you have any other players you want to highlight real quick before we call it a day?
Oak Ridge represent T. Higgins. Should have been a UT Vol. Thanks, Butch Jones, for that. Man, just another another notch in the I hate you column to old Lyle out there. But, yeah, no, man, I mean, T. Higgins didn't really blow anybody away off the stat sheet. 3 catches, 52 yards. He did have the 36-yard touchdown on the end around. I think it was an end around. But either way, 36-yard touchdown on the ground. I mean, the dude is just a big-bodied capable receiver. He can get separation. He's got the speed to bring you deep. He's arguably the most complete receiver in the draft, in my opinion. I mean, you just look at what he can do, especially against higher levels of competition, and you can't guard him in college. You just can't, and he's going to be difficult to be guarded in the NFL as well. Can get separation right off the snap. And like I said, just putting him in the right offense, I would love to see him to go to a place like Philadelphia, maybe even Seattle, depending on what they want to do. Hell, even Tennessee Titans, they're going to need some help probably after Tajay Sharp possibly walks this year. So would love, but he's going to go in the first round. He's going to be a first round talent no matter what. So Buck's probably not going to get him. But yeah, T. Higgins, definitely an honorable mention. I love what the Duke can do.
Yeah, I mean, as long as he can stop getting those offensive pass interference penalties, he'll be all right.
That offensive pass interference will be $150, man. I don't even want to get started on it.
Listen, here's what I will say about that penalty. In that game,
wasn't that Delpit in coverage? Situation, wasn't that Delpit in coverage too?
That's not, to be honest with you. I can't remember who the cover guy was.
Okay.
But in that game, in that situation, I'm sorry. You can't throw that flag.
You cannot throw that flag.
If you look at the proper angle, as the ball is getting ready to come down, Higgins does grab the dude by the by the jersey on the shoulder and gives him a nice little yank, which I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say in the moment. I feel like whoever the defender was, I feel like the defender may have sold it a little bit more than it needed to be sold, but you can see how that pull could potentially take the defender to the ground the way that it kind of did. And lead to that play. So I think the black and white is it was a call that fits the defense. But in that game, in that situation, you don't throw that flag, bro.
No.
I don't think you throw that flag. But
no.
That's unless you have something to add.
No, man, that's it. I think we covered everything pretty damn well.
All right. So I think most of these episodes are probably gonna go a little bit long just because Evan, you and I both we have a good passion for talking about this kind of stuff.
Yes, sir.
But ladies and gentlemen, all of you guys out there, appreciate you as always for joining us. Again, I'm David Harrison. You can follow me on Twitter at @DHA_Bucks. Follow Evan, who you've been loyally listening to for most of the season, unless he's out there tearing his ACL and recovering from surgery, at Evan _winner. I don't even know why I brought that up. I'm sorry. Find everything we're writing about the Tampa being. All of the pros and cons about Jameis Winston returning to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers over at BucksNation.com, on Twitter at @Bucks_Nation. Follow the show at @LockedOnBucks. We've got 5 or 6 more prospects coming for you guys next week. You guys have been great. We've got even more Evan in the inbox coming to us. Bailey actually even to add him to the list as well. If you guys have prospects out there that you want to hear about, by all means, drop them in the voicemail box, drop them in the DMs, or just hit us up on Twitter and let us know that you want to talk about them, and we'll add them to our list. We're going to be doing this all off season leading up to the NFL draft. So this has been our national championship recap, winners and losers, a couple of honorable mentions in there. Thank you guys so much for joining us right here at Locked On Bucks.
Are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.